Welcome to the Brown County Hour.
Coming to you from the legendary hills of Brown,
where the plum purple haze,
the one nature herself drapes over the hills and hollers,
inspires local characters, artists, and nature lovers.
It's as though the hills themselves conspire to create a beauty and culture in the heart of Indiana.
Sit for a spell and hear the music.
Tall tales.
True stories.
And current goings on.
Brought to you by folks who still know how to sit by a fire in winter.
And swim buck naked in summer.
Welcome to episode 164 of the Brown County Hour. This is Pam Rader.
And Dave Seastrom, along with the rest of the crew. This month, our musical guest is Frank Jones, and we'll feature a selection of his pre-recorded music. We also have interviews with the editor of the Brown County Democrat, Dakota Bruton, Mark Three Hawks, and local artist Amanda Wallace Mathis.
We hear some information about the annual Brown County Children's Fund auction. We also have essays from Rick Vedic and Dave Seastrom, and a special thank you message to our fund drive donors.
Segment one begins with our Frank Jones interview. Frank was in the studio promoting an upcoming event at the Brown County Playhouse on November 22nd. We'll also hear Frank Jones and the Undertones perform Down in a Hole, and it was recorded live at the Playhouse. Nashville native Dakota Bruton left for journalism school and returned to work at the Brown County Democrat, our local paper, where she is now the editor. Hear about her recent first reporting award for a Democrat story and her vision for the future of our paper. This is Rick Fettig. We're here in our Brown County Hour studio, and we got a full house here with all of our team members, and we got Frank Jones here with us, and he's going to tell us a little bit about his current events and activities.
And I'm Pam Rader.
And I'm Chuck Wills, along for the ride on this one.
And I'm still Frank Jones.
Welcome, Frank.
Howdy. Good to be here.
Well, thank you. We appreciate you being here. You've got a long history around these parts, but you currently have a new group, a more electric group, and then you're also with the FCR group, the little trio.
Yeah, thank you. We've been having a lot of fun. The FCR trio that we've had in operation now for several years got a show coming up, I guess it's on November 22nd. And
at the Playhouse.
The Playhouse in beautiful downtown Nashville. And it's going to be a nice little show, I'll tell you what. We hope to bring in Carolyn Dutton, I think, is going to be sitting in with us.
Awesome.
And whoever else we can coerce into some stage time, maybe. But
well, Frank, who's in that band?
What band is this? FCR?
Yeah.
Well, that's actually Frank Jones, Chuck Wills, and Rick Clayton. And we have a lot of fun, and we play songs that we like, and I love this incarnation of this band because during rehearsal, it starts with, what do we want to say? What's the theme of this thing? What are we going to do with this show? And I like that a lot. And yeah, it's just fun. Musically, it's enjoyable. Instead of just grabbing a set list and throwing a bunch of stuff together, which is fun on one level, but when you can walk into it with a little bit more of a organized approach.
Yeah. So
well, and I have to say, playing with Frank is a treat because he is truly a musical encyclopedia. Name a song, he knows it.
Mm-hmm. And he's played with umpteen musicians in the county over the years.
Lucky. Yes, I've been real lucky. Yeah. I started playing guitar in this little church in Freetown with my brother. And because we could find cute girls that would listen to us there. And we really didn't care about church. It was just the girls. And, you know, it's 13, 14-year-old guys, and we got the bug, you know? So started with that, and that was the impetus enough to, you know, here I am, almost 70, still playing, fingers still work.
The thing is, you still enjoy it.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
When you guys get together with your FCR group, do you write new stuff? Do you guys play covers?
And one of the things that we looked at actually on our last show, we highlighted Brown County musicians. I think we played one of My Brother Dickie's. We played some Buzzy Jones.
Some Slats Klug.
Some Slats Klug. I forgot about that. Yeah, that was great.
So every show's different.
Yeah, we try to.
I like that.
We hope for it to be, yeah. But as far as playing music, as long as I can keep doing that, I'm a happy man.
Mm-hmm. Pam, you were asking about original music.
Mm-hmm.
Frank has a relatively new musical vehicle that really focuses heavily on his original music.
Mm-hmm.
Aha. Uh-huh.
We kind of came up with a name for a little one-set show that we did at the Playhouse. And Frank Jones and the Undertones was born. And it definitely works towards expanding on the original tunes because I've played covers all my life. And it's hard not to because I love music and I love all the Bruce Coburns of the world and Emerson, Lake and Palmer, and all these different, you know, forms are just too good to let sit. But the original stuff, it's fun to tap into that because I get to hear what I heard when I wrote it. And that's the best part of it. One of the songs that we did at the Playhouse was called Down in the Hole. And it's very much in the vein of the late 60s, Neil Youngish sort of David Crosby kind of a rock and roll approach as far as a band, which is a rarity nowadays, to really get that bite for the lyric. Because the lyric was about driving down the road and hearing a song and going to a hole in the ground and the devil is in there. The devil's falling in a well and he's singing. And the lyrics are really hard-hitting when done correctly. So you need music to kind of...
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a heck of a song, then.
Yeah, yeah.
To go to all those places.
But the moral of the story is, if there's someone you know that's in a hole, give them a rope, hand them a ladder. Never get in the hole, ever.
Down in a hole. took that first step and the rope gave away. I was cast down to the water and clay. Well, I heard from above waters rise in the spring. Alone in the well, I started to sing. And I was singing.
I turned left on Highway 50 in Nevada in the desert and went out there and said, say, this looks like a good place to write a song. And I wrote that song and then put it in my pack and drove on to Reno. It was weird. I rarely write songs like that. That's why I always admired my brother. I can do that every once in a while where they just come out. That's not the most. Most of them are labored and calculated, but that one wasn't. It just kind of came right out in about 45 minutes and bambity bam. But it's just part of playing. It's just, you know, part of hanging out with people that you really enjoy being with. And that's one of the things I like about this band that we've got, the Undertones. It's people that I genuinely enjoy hanging out with. Chuck, Loretta, Vincent, Stephen Varish, I think we just all like to torture Stephen, so that's why everyone hangs out with him.
Well, you know, Frank, you ran into a friend of yours at the last gig who has heard the Undertones twice now, and the comment he made, he's known you for decades upon decades. The comment he made was, the Undertones is the most Frank Jones band he has ever heard.
Wow.
It's like, well, the distillation
it is
of decades of Frank.
Well,
in the Undertones.
For decades, it was just me and a guitar, you know, wherever I was going to be playing. And lucky enough to hook up with people like Jeff Foster and Carolyn Dutton, and we played for years.
Oh,
and,
yeah, I was
Foster
groovy.
Jones had a long storied adventure there, and that was fun. That was fun to always do that. So
when are the Undertones playing now?
As far as getting out into the world, we're going to be 2 days after Christmas, if I'm not mistaken, on December 27th, my wedding anniversary, at the Country Heritage Winery here in town, formerly known as Chateau Thomas. And we're going to be there for, a 3-hour set.
Yeah, and FCR will be at Brown County Playhouse
on the 22nd.
On November 22nd, and that will also include Carolyn Dutton and maybe Loretta Vinson.
Love to have Loretta in. We're trying to coerce her now because I love Loretta. She's just one of my best buddies, and she's the rock. She's the John Entwistle of the band because she just stands there and plays bass. I'll hop around, fall down, and roll around like a cat. And she'll just stand there and play, and it's actually quite refreshing.
Okay, Frank. Well, thank you for coming in, and it's always a pleasure to see you.
I love you guys. Yeah, I'm glad you do this. This is a good thing to do, and I just love the whole idea. Glad to put it out over the airwaves, and thank you guys for doing this. Nobody says that nearly enough.
Well, thank you for entertaining us all these years.
Yeah.
And thanks for coming in.
Yeah, no problem.
All right, this has been Chuck Wills,
Pam Rader,
Rick Fettig,
with Frank Jones on the Brown County Hour.
This is Chad Crothers for the Brown County Hour on WFHB. Our special guest in the studio today, Dakota Bruton, the new editor of the Brown County Democrat. Welcome, Dakota.
Hi, thank you. Welcome, guys. I'm so happy to be here.
Tell us about yourself. Where'd you come from? And I want to hear your Brown County story, how you ended up in Brown County.
Well, I came from Brown County.
Really?
So I moved down here when I was 3. I went to school in Brown County schools. I did 4-H. I fell in love with the place from a very young age.
Cool.
I went away for college. I went as far as Indianapolis. So I made it pretty far away.
Yeah.
But then I realized that there's nothing like this small community that we have here. You know, I knew I wanted to get back into journalism, and where better to start than home, you know? So I decided to come back, and I love it here.
So you know the community really well. You're from here.
I do. Which, funny enough, I went away a couple years for college. I came back, and it felt like a whole new place.
Really?
It felt like an entirely new place.
But what was different?
I think it was just a lot of the people. The environment was a little bit more progressive when I came home. Seeing it as an adult is very different.
So you're the editor of the Brown County Democrat now.
I am.
Tell us about your journey with the paper, like how you first got involved with the Brown County Democrat and how you ended up in the top seat.
Yeah. So I reached out to the Democrat a few years ago. I probably shouldn't have, but I reached out myself and I said, hey, I think you guys might need some help. Can I apply for the position? Because something's going on and you need something. And I heard nothing back. And then about 6 months later, I got an email saying, oh, were you serious about that? We're actually hiring.
6 months later.
And 6 months later. And I said, oh my God, they read my email. That's terrifying. That's so scary. And so I got the position as the reporter. It was my first job in the industry. So I was, you know, coming in a little hot, straight from college and everything. But
that's what you went to school for?
And so I went to school for.
Okay.
And so I was like, oh my God, I get to actually use my degree. Who's ever done that before
in
this day
right?
and age, you know? So I started working as a reporter. And I think since I've been there, it's been almost 2 years. I'm the third editor. So we had a lot of turnover.
The third editor in that 2 years.
In that 2 years.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was the third editor, and in the same year that I had started here, I was the third reporter. So we had a ton of turnover. We had no stability with the community. And so I knew coming in I wanted to be the stability that we needed. So I was really hoping to eventually work my way up. I didn't realize the editor was going to leave so quickly. And so I got thrust into this position, kind of a trial by fire. But yeah, I'm really happy to be here.
Well, that's awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
2 years is a pretty short ascension to
the throne.
It's
pretty short. It's pretty short. But, yeah. You know, I mean, you never know if you can do it until you try.
Do you remember the first story that you wrote for the Brown County Democrat?
You know what's funny? The first story that I wrote was about myself, and it was one of the hardest stories I've ever written.
Like a meet the new reporter?
Yeah,
kind of
yeah, it was okay. A meet the new reporter, but
well,
I
what
had...
was in it? What did you say?
Well, I talked about my childhood and about college and, you know, why I was excited to be here, but I'm like, I feel like fraud. Like, why am I writing about myself? So I think after that, I covered a few meetings. That was my first experience. Like outside of writing about myself.
Yeah.
So that was a lot better, a lot easier.
Well, it's just wonderful to have someone who's from this community be making the editorial decisions. Tell us a little bit about that. Like, what's your thought process for like, what's newsworthy? You know, what are your news values?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that we all as local journalists have to, you know, focus on integrity and honesty. And I hold the community really closely to my heart. I mean, I want them to know that the paper is not mine to own. You know, I mean, I stepped into this position, but I don't own it. I think it's like on lease to me. You know what I mean?
Mm.
So I want to make sure that the community is at the center of every decision that I make, whether it's what the community likes for me to do versus what I think the community needs. That's
which is not always the same.
It's not always the same thing. But you know, I think I try to just make sure that we're covering both local government, which is my reporter, Courtney Hewitt. She's an incredible addition to the team. Thankfully, now I have a full staff. So it's not just me anymore, which is beautiful. So I have Courtney Hewitt as the reporter. I have Nicole Whitaker as the customer service representative. They're both locals, which is beautiful. So they also know how to like bring in those stories and everything. But Courtney focuses on local government. I focus on editorials. When I first came in, we had one editor who didn't think we should cover government at all. At all.
Okay.
And then we had another who thought that's all we should cover.
Okay.
And so I want to try and do something in the middle because I think that local government is extremely important, obviously, especially in this time and age. Local policymaking is everything, unfortunately. So we do need to cover that. But I also think that our community would not be what it is without the artisans, the artists, the shopkeepers, the just the people that make it what it is, you know? So I want to try and honor those people as much as I can in every decision that I make. Yeah.
So in this last 2 years, what do you think's the best work that the Brown County Democrat has done?
I actually just won my first award for journalism over the weekend.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah,
what award?
It's the Hoosier State Press Association Award, but it's the like best portrait, one of the best portrait stories.
Cool.
So one of the best profile stories on a mom who had lost her son to a fentanyl overdose.
Oh.
And so we covered that last year. And the story was really, it was very tough.
Yeah.
But it was really important and needed to be said. So I feel very proud that that's what won the award for us.
Yeah, that's a hard.
It was a really tough story. I mean, I got to go to her house and sit with her and see, you know, the home and the bedroom and all of the experiences. And it was really tough, but I think that I'm glad that we got to tell that story.
Yeah, I mean, that's an important, I mean, it's an ugly truth, but it's truth.
Absolutely.
It's something that we're dealing with
in
a lot of parts of our
state. Well, I think every single person either has dealt with it or knows someone that has dealt with addiction or overdose or substance abuse. So I think it's a story that needs to be told.
Yeah. As we wind down, I'm wondering, where do we go from here with the Brown County Democrat? Like, what's your vision for the future?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know that I mentioned wanting to try to find the balance, and I think I'm still working on that. And mm-hmm. I really appreciate the grace that I've been given from the community as I step into this role. But I would like to try and find that balance of how to incorporate all the things that make our community so special in the paper. And I going to the HSPA conference, we learned a lot about new things to try to get more readership. And that's obviously a goal. Trying to get readers that are my age, I mean, that would be incredible. I'm trying to figure out how to get the people. And there are so many people my age that go, there's a newspaper in Brown County?
Uh-huh.
And I'm just like, oh, it's just a punch to the gut. You know, it really, it's like, oh, no. You know, I grew up reading it with my grandpa. So I know how important it is to the community. So I want to try and find ways to connect with our younger audience, our middle-aged audience, even children. I would love to find a way to get children involved in the newspaper from a young age.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of things in the barrel that we're wanting to try and do to still preserve the history of the paper, but also just try new things, you know, play around a little bit, have fun with it. So
we love having you here. Thanks so much for coming in. Again, we've been speaking with Dakota Bruton. She's the new editor of the Brown County Democrat. For the Brown County Hour on WFHB, I'm Chad Carruthers. Dakota, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, guys.
Now we pause for station identification.
You are listening to the Brown County Hour on volunteer-powered community radio, WFHB, at 100.7 in Brown County, 91.3 and 98.1 in Bloomington, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at wfhb.org.
Support for WFHB comes from Our Brown County, a magazine for locals and visitors featuring art, entertainment, and county characters since 1995. Printed 6 times a year and available online. More information at rbrowncounty.com.
Mark Threehawks takes us on a journey to Browning Mountain and explains the significance of this area to Native Americans. Rick Fettig has a few words about being thankful, and we hear the Frank Jones song, Pretending. This segment closes with a public service announcement about the Brown County Children's Auction.
Hi, this is Lucy Schultz. I'm here with Mark Threehawks. How are you today, Mark?
I'm very well, thank you.
Oh my goodness, we went on the best hike today. We went up to Brownie Mountain.
Yes, we did.
It was so great.
Yeah.
And it totally had some very good vibes, for me at least. I enjoyed it.
It was a good day.
It was a good day.
Beautiful sun, beautiful temperature. It was perfect for the day.
So tell me a little bit about you.
I come from indigenous lineage. I'm Shawnee. My people come from this land here in Brown County and stretch over into Ohio. Just raised up half indigenous, half European, and took the native way, and that's what directs my life in this world. And I choose that way of life over anything else. Went to high school here, graduated, very quickly discovered that I didn't fit into society well here and the way people do business. And I went into my own business and at the age of 18 and a half and just retired last year.
Oh,
after 51 years of
a mechanic. You were a mechanic.
I was a mechanic for 51 years.
You were sought after for your mechanical abilities.
That's what they tell me.
Yes.
Yeah.
So on our walk today, we specifically went to Browning Mountain because there's quite a lot of folklore surrounding Browning Mountain. What do you know about Browning Mountain? I've heard you've been going there since you were a kid.
Well, yeah. My first visit to Browning Mountain, apparently it was somewhere around 1958 or 9. And I went with my dad and an elder cousin, and they were just starting to quarry the stones up on top of Browning Mountain. There used to be these very large megalithic stones, some of them 4 feet in width, probably 12 to 14 feet in length, and about 3 to 4 feet in thickness. They ringed the top of that hill and were stacked a level of 3 high stones. So it was a really large site. Apparently, the stones were arranged east to west, going through the south, and the north end was open. I vaguely remember the large stones. I was pretty small, and I just remember them being extremely large up there.
Yeah.
And they were, people were starting to quarry them out to sell for building purposes, but there's still quite a few large stones up there that still ring the area. And then there's also alignments with solstice and equinox up there. And I have a report from a man that describes in detail with maps of solstice lines, equinox lines, and different features up there that were laid out with the stones. And so, yes, it has a spiritual history, and it would have been Native Americans who did that. Then as the Native population was pushed out in the early 1800s, a lot of that just died off, and any information's pretty much inaccessible about that now.
Mm.
But people that are connected spiritually will go to that hilltop, and they'll have all kinds of experiences. When I was a kid, the elders used to talk about the watchers,
okay.
And the watchers were the protectors of the hill there. And that's what the elders called that, was the hill. It didn't come, the name Browning Mountain didn't come until later on when a man by the name of Jesse Browning bought it. There was an orchard up there that predates anyone's knowledge. They don't know who planted it,
wow.
How it got there. There's the foundation, a cellar of an old cabin on the north rim of the hill. And there's also a well next to where that cabin was. You can still see the stone foundation of the basement. No one knows who built it. They don't have any timeline of when it was done. And in one of the reports that I've read about that was the well was built in a fashion that was typical of people in the northwestern portion of Europe, like up around in where the Vikings and the Druids would have been. And so when I look at that, I'm going, well, who came here before?
Yeah.
Maybe even before the Native population or during the Native population. You're on a hilltop that the elevation is somewhere just under 1,000 feet elevation, which is high for this county. So it's the second highest point in the county. And there's a well on the very top of this hill that never goes dry.
It was about half full today.
Yeah.
And it stunk.
And it did stink. But the interesting thing about the well is it's the first 6 or 7 feet of it was dug through the clay dirt surface, and it has laid up stones. But then below that is about 3 feet of bedrock that somebody carved through. The well's about 4 feet in diameter.
It's a big well.
It is. And somebody dug through that board and shale stone. And on down, they no doubt hit multiple layers of stone to get to the well. And so when people talk about it being a spiritual place, it takes something for water, groundwater to get that high up, like artesian wells or some water source down below. It's not watershed. There's nothing above it.
Mm, true.
It's always full.
Hmm.
So how did they know it was there? Well, if a lot of the old timers witched or dowsing, call it dowsing,
mm-hmm.
And you can find water and anomalies in the ground that way, but it would have to be a very strong signal for them to want to carve through that much stone.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like your idea that the actual spring might feed that well.
Just my knowledge of wells and springs around this area in Brown County. It has to be a spring-fed well.
Yeah.
So there's been people going up there for a very long time.
Oh, yeah. The path was about like you would see a path in Brown County State Park. I mean, it was well-traveled. You have another good story about somebody that lived at the base of the hill getting lost?
Oh, yeah. I'll just share his first name, Sam. Sam lived there for decades, and he went out mushroom hunting. And this has maybe been now maybe 10 years ago, and he didn't come home.
Mm.
He got lost. There's only one direction, and that's due east that you could go and not hit a creek or a road to tell you where you were at. And so Sam spent the night in the woods, and everybody's really freaked out about it. And they had searchers out looking for him. And he finally came in that next day, you know, in the morning, late morning. And the consensus was that he just got turned around.
Hmm.
But what I know about the hill is because there's spiritual activity up there, they will confuse you.
Okay.
And you won't know which way you're going.
Ah.
And they'll take
tricks
on you. They'll chase you in circles.
Oh, my
and
goodness.
It sounds to me, I told Sam, I said, oh, the watcher got a hold of you, didn't he?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Oh.
That's I don't awesome. Know if that's true, but it's a good story, right?
It's a great story.
But he did get lost up on the hill.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, there were always these stories, you know, don't go up on the hill because the watchers up there, they didn't know whether it was, they talked like it might have been a Sasquatch or something. There's no signs of that, but I can assure you that there's strange energies on the hill.
It's been so great to chat with you, and hopefully we can continue this in the future, talking about Browning Mountain.
I'd love to.
I've been speaking with Mark Threehawks, and this is Lucy Schultz on Brown County Hour, WFHB.
Well, here we are in November, when we have one of the legitimate holidays. Thanksgiving. With all politics aside, this is the one holiday when we remind ourselves to be thankful. I think gratitude is a great asset to one's life. I'll tell you one thing I'm grateful for. Yellow traffic lights. I have been blessed lately with frequently catching the yellow light. No stopping, dum-da-dum-dum-dum, and then start from scratch and take off. Think of the time and energy that it saves. Now, I don't push it and try to squeeze through. I am respectful, and I always lift a thought of gratitude. It's the same with parking spaces. The ones you can pull straight out of without having to back up and then pull out, especially the angled ones where one is in front of the other. You can pull straight through and then take off when it's time to leave. I'm very grateful for these, but I also watch for them, scanning the parking area as I pull in. Not long ago, I grabbed an old wheelbarrow to use on a cleanup job. I noticed the handles were rather weathered. Well, sure enough, one of the handles broke on the first full load. I grabbed the one handle and the edge of the wheelbarrow and managed to push it to the trash trailer. As I finished emptying the wheelbarrow, I looked, and there on the ground was a perfect little 2x2. And with all my tools right there, I screwed it onto the remaining part of the handle, and voila, I again had two handles. Talk about being thankful. I still had two more loads to haul. But you see, it all starts with being thankful. Being thankful, and then watching for the next thing to be thankful for, like that next parking space. That's where the synergy comes in. Being grateful opens doors of possibility. We have so many things to be thankful for. Are you listening to this? You can be thankful for your hearing, or just the fact that you're alive. We're thankful for our food, our clothes, the roof over our head, our family and friends, and so on. But sometimes challenging times come upon us, and we might wonder why. Often difficult times open up opportunities for change. And positive, constructive change is something we can be thankful for. I'm going to be bold here, but I think I can speak for us here at the Brown County Hour and for the station itself, WFHB, the mothership, when I say how thankful we all are for everyone who contributed to this most recent fund drive, and all the fund drives, of course. These are challenging times, and communications like public radio, community radio, PBS, and etc. are very crucial if truth is to reign. From the little donor copping the yellow light, to the volunteers, and to the sustaining members, we are thankful to everyone who contributed. We had a matching donor this year, but guess what? They matched what everyone else contributed. So, it took the effort of a village to rise to the occasion. Thanks to each and every one of you. This is Rick Fettig with the Brown County Hour on WFHB.
Pretending it's just the way you call my name. pretending that I love you just the same. I'm afraid for it to end, so I find you here again, pretending to pretend. That's the way I finally feel, completely empty and just a little bit unreal. I know that it's a shame I go on now with the game. It's your deal.
Hi, everybody. It's the Real Santa Claus coming to you live on the Brown County Radio Hour. Coming at you to let you know that the 48th annual Brown County Children's Auction is happening live Friday, December 5th at 6 p.m. at the Brown County Inn. For the last 48 years, people of Brown County have come together to donate auction items for this live auction. Then we take all the money raised and we use it to buy clothing right here for kids in Brown County. All proceeds will go to the children, as always. For more information, please see our website at browncountychildrensauction.com. If you have an item you would like to donate, drop it off at Out of the Ordinary or call 812-320-2601 to arrange a pickup. Thanks once again for supporting all the children in Brown County.
Now we pause for station identification.
You are listening to the Brown County Hour on Volunteer Powered Community Radio, WFHB, at 100.7 in Brown County, 91.3 and 98.1 in Bloomington, 106.3 at Ellettsville, and online at WFHB.org.
Support for WFHB comes from the Brown County Inn. Located just off the main street of Nashville, Indiana, at 51 State Road 46 East. Brown County Inn is also a restaurant, bar, and gathering place for visitors and locals alike. More information at browncountyinn.com.
In our final segment, we have an interview with artist Amanda Wallace Mathis as she shares some information about her work and the 100th anniversary of the Brown County Art Gallery. Dave Seastrom has a few thoughts about accumulation and how to get rid of it. And we'll listen to the Frank Jones song, Just Another Night in the City. We'll close the show with a few words of gratitude from our founding mother, Pam Rader. But first, we begin segment 3 with a poetry feature. The author of the photo book, Brown County Folks, Rick Albertson, shares meditations from his new book, Stoveside Surveys, while seated next to the wood stove in his cabin on Greasy Creek Road. Each episode has a companion photo you can view on our website. And Rick starts each Stoveside Survey with a description of that photo. This time, a photo of the Bean Blossom Overlook.
looking at a photo of yellowish-white clouds scuttling across the early morning sky over the Bean Blossom Lookout. Change of season is upon the land. A stiff, cool breeze from the north announcing the futility to ward it off. The slender young poplars on the crest of the hill wave back and forth, seeming very silly to the sturdy, stunted oaks, speaking truth of change, their outermost leaves stirring in a golden hue. Meanwhile, minions of older, stately maples and hickories swirl about in redness as if to assure their young neighbors that all is well. Change comes, change goes. A flash of black and bright red. The downy woodpecker drills a dead tree nearby, storing fodder for the coming cold days and colder nights. The light is magical, yet not too contrasty. Crisp light that reveals the time of change each fall. Shadows deep and dark cover distant hillsides, overseen by bright, white clouds scuttling in haste through a startlingly clear blue sky. Everything is alive, so alive, as if coming out to play this special day, knowing full well the death of winter, the deep sleep of change, is soon, soon upon them.
Hi, Brown County. This is Lucy Schultz, and I'm here with Amanda Wallace Mathis. Hi, Amanda. How are you today?
I'm good.
So you're an artist here in town, and you're a very popular artist, and you show your work at the Brown County Art Gallery?
Brown County Art Gallery, and I have a home studio also, and I'm with the Spears Gallery.
Okay.
Spears Gallery.
And how would you describe your art? If somebody, you know, we can't see while we're on the radio here, how would you describe it?
I've been labeled primitive, which would be similar to naive or folk art, but it's not Grandma Moses, which a lot of people are familiar with. It's not sloppy. Bill Zimmerman years ago told me that it was educated primitive, and oh. I've stuck with that.
Oh, yeah. Bill had a good take on that, for sure.
Yeah, he did.
Wonderful artist.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about your home gallery. Can people come and enjoy your art at any time? Or
I'm there most of the time, but I do feel that it's a good idea to call ahead.
As a child, I grew up doing art myself, and I always looked up to you as an artist. I always enjoyed your work. Thing that always stuck out to me is that you never really draw faces on any of your people or your animals. And is there a reason?
My mother was my first art teacher. And if she had painted as much as I do, or your mother, she probably would be in the Brown County Art Gallery also. And she would take canvases and cut them up. And I had very small 4x4s. And I would try to put faces, and I couldn't do it. So she showed me Impressionist painters and showed how they use shadows. So I was able to use faces in that way, and I was intrigued with the fact that a lot of the Impressionist painters didn't really put faces. And then as I got older and got more into what I was doing, my own style, I noticed that if I did do faces, people saw things differently than what I did. So I could have painted a child with a smiling face, and I would hear people say, oh, he must be really upset, or they had a different take.
Yeah.
And I have so much going on in my paintings, a lot of detail, that I started just leaving them off and letting people look and decide what they wanted to decide with emotions. And I also found out that because of all the detail I have, that a lot of people didn't even notice that there weren't faces.
Interesting.
So I just kind of went with it.
Yeah. And I was actually looking through some of your work, and you will actually put like a face on a ghost or something.
Like a jack-o'-lantern might have a face, because they're not, it's not a person.
It's a jack-o'-lantern.
Yeah. So, you know, or a ghost will have eyes. But I do sunglasses, I do glasses, I'll do goatees. I do a lot of commission work, and it's usually of people's homes and families, and I can make you look like you without the face.
So I've heard that you're quite the popular artist at the Brown County Art Gallery, that you're very sought after. how do people, like you said, you have people that commission, do they contact the Brown County Art Gallery to get a hold of you, or how would we get a hold of you?
I'm at the gallery, Brown County Art Gallery. Through that, I have a website that I don't keep up because I'm an artist. I have trouble doing that.
I also heard that you do classes at the Brown County Art Gallery.
Yes, I do.
How does that work? Are they all ages?
In 2026 will be our third year, and we call it Make Art, Make Friends. And it's 55 and up, 3 days a week for 4 months.
Wow.
Each month has a different session.
And to sign up for that, again, just call
the Brown County Art Gallery. The big thing that I do want to talk about is next year, 2026, will be the 100th anniversary of the Brown County Art Gallery. We are the oldest art association in the state of Indiana. We'll have the art classes. We have children's classes in the summer. So I think it's really important that people understand that the Brown County Art Gallery has been here for 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a testament not only to the association itself, but to the artists.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Art is part of our history.
It is.
And
it is. You can't separate.
No, can't. Absolutely not.
Uh-uh.
Brown County Art.
Yep.
Yeah. It was so great talking with you today, Amanda.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much for coming in. This is Lucy Schultz on Brown County Hour on WFHB.
The very first friend I made when we moved to Brown County 49 years ago was a much older man named John Wesley Carter. He and his wife, May, lived across the road from us on a 40-acre patch of forest. As I got to know him, the one thing that impressed me the most was the unbelievable collection of goods he had accumulated in his 70-plus years on the planet. John and May originally lived in a walnut-paneled farmhouse. Over time, that house was filled with boxes full of auction items and Lord knows what else. When they could no longer move about from room to room, John bought a trailer and they moved into it next to their completely full house. When the trailer started filling up, May put her foot down and she demanded a better situation. In response, John began purchasing semi-trailers. One by one, they were brought to the property and filled to capacity. As they were filled, the next trailer would be brought in. By the time I met them, there were at least six or more semi-trailers that were all stuffed to the gills, and there were several piles of yard and field equipment surrounding their almost full single-wide and the completely full house they used to live in. One thing about John, he really loved his stuff, and no amount of asking would persuade him to sell any of it. Today, we call this type of behavior hoarding. But John's accumulation had much deeper roots than that. John lived through the Great Depression, and he valued having stuff over having money in the bank. He had seen money become worthless, and he never wanted to be poor and hungry again. When he passed away, the auction took 3 days as two auctioneers worked simultaneously to sell all of his goods. Having his example to observe, I was determined not to follow in his footsteps. Having said that, in spite of my intentions to the contrary, after a lifetime of accumulation, we have too much stuff. Honestly, this situation has been made worse by the combination of living in one place for so many years and continuing to add to the pile long past any sensible reason to do so. I mean, what the hell was I thinking? The short answer is the lack of recognition that getting older means not being able to do the same things forever that you did when you were young. We never actually own anything. We're simply managers for the time we're allotted, and you can't take it with you. The way I see it, there are a few options. The burial mound. Here we have a mound that's filled with grave goods, where your moldering corpse is placed on top of all the stuff you thought was cool in an attempt to make a statement about how important you thought you were. If your stuff survives the grave robbers for 1,000 years, it might end up in a museum, or maybe it will all rot. The big auction. I've been to a lot of these. In fact, auctions are the source of much of the crap I need to deal with. This is a giant sale where your lifetime accumulation of goods are spread out on tarps or tables, sells for a few cents on the dollar, and the auctioneer makes more money than you do. Sell it on eBay. This requires a lot of effort that is almost as much work as it took to bring all of that stuff home in the first place. Leave it to your kids. Not all kids want your crap. I'm pretty sure mine doesn't, and I suspect that as soon as I've gone cold, a giant roll-off dumpster will be delivered, and aside from a few items, the rest will end up in a landfill. This is sort of like the burial mound, only it's collective, and they discourage adding a body to the mix. Fire. It can happen. But it's the one option nobody wants, and it's best to be avoided at all costs. Finding good homes for your stuff. This is what we do for our animal babies, and out of all of the options, this is the one that has the most merit. The thing I like most about this choice is getting rid of your stuff in a way that benefits somebody else. In a way, it passes the buck to the next generation, but if these items are useful, they might eventually be passed down to the next user. In the meantime, the best first step to elimination is to stop bringing more crap home. This is Dave Seastrom. See you next time.
Well, it was just another night in the city, counting street lights and bar fights and signs saying, come on in. Well, my throat it grew dry and my eyes caught a peaceful cantina. And while crossing the street, something sweet drifted by in the wind. In a corner, the table was empty and a candle was burning. I sat down and unwound the sound of one lonely guitar. Ordered beer and she said, not here, man, we're just got tequila. I said, fine, and her eyes seemed to fly to the man at the bar. Well, it was just another night in the city, counting streetlights and bar fights and signs saying, come on in. Well, my throat it grew dry and my eye caught a peaceful cantina. And while crossing the street, something sweet drifted by in the wind. Well, the hours flew by as I sat in that peaceful cantina. And I wondered why I ever thought that tequila was good. Said I'll never come back, and I laughed and ordered another. The guitar player smiled with his eyes, 'cause he knew that I would. 'Cause it was just another night in the city, counting streetlights and bar fights and signs saying, come on in. Well, my throat it grew dry and my eye caught a peaceful cantina. And while crossing the street, something sweet drifted by in the wind. Something sweet drifted by in the wind.
Pam Rader here for the Brown County Hour with a huge thank you to all our radio fans.
I've been with the Brown County Hour since its inception. Our first show aired in June 2010. That's 15 years we've been at it. Mostly, I believed in the concept of community radio, local and grassroots. We could spread our wings, and it was ours, not part of a huge conglomerate. I've seen us go through hard times and bounce back stronger. The same for WFHB. When I was on the station's board, the CPB grant was a big part of our funding. Losing that was a huge blow financially. Miraculously, a donor stepped forward and we were off to the races. We all thought that we might not meet the $100,000 goal. Never have I been more proud and heartwarmed by our community than when we reached our goal last month. In the end, it is community that sustains us. We can and do rise to the occasion, especially in times of need. So thanks to all of you. Well, all of us, since we're in it together.
Thanks for tuning in to episode 164 of the Brown County Hour. This show was recorded in our studio at the History Center here in downtown Nashville and brought to you the first Sunday of every month at 9 a.m. and the following Wednesday at 6 p.m. and anytime online. Be sure to look for us on your favorite streaming services.
The Brown County Hour is brought to you by a diverse group of folks who believe, now more than ever, the world is for everyone.
This show was produced by
Chuck Wills,
Pam Rader,
Rick Fettig,
Vera Grubbs,
Lucy Schultz,
Sarah Lytle,
Chad Carruthers,
and Dave Seastrom. We would also like to thank Slats Klug for our theme music. You have been listening to the Brown County Hour,
coming to you from deep in the woods of Brown County, Indiana.
Celebrating the arts, culture, and nature that make this such a unique community.
Visit us online at browncountyhour.com.
The Brown County Hour is a production of WFHB.
Volunteer-powered, listener-supported community radio for South Central Indiana.
Take me back to my home, Brown County home.